Some sense of the size of the fan art scene can be given by the fact that Japan's largest doujinshi convention, Comic Market, or Comiket, has more fan artist tables than Otakon has attendees. And Comiket's attendees number in excess of 350,000, more than every U.S. anime and manga con put together. Still more amazing, this event happens not once, but twice a year, and Comiket is only the largest such event. There are doujin conventions somewhere in Japan every weekend. This begins part two of the discussion with Allison about the Otakon Artist Alley policy. I mean, I think it's very important to point out that repeatedly early on in this thread, Rachel was extremely, extremely explicit and kept re-clarifying to be even more explicit about the fact that if you don't have the license to sell it, you should not sell it.
Yeah. Which, legally, that's, you know...
That's true.
That's true.
That's very true.
It's just, historically, it's just very different from Otakon's previous Artist Alley policies where, you know, this is what, the 11th or 12th? Otakon 10 was one before last. Anyway, this is like Otakon 12 or something. So for a decade, they allowed all kinds of crazy fan art. And the only really restrictions were, you know, if it's adult material, keep it under, you know, under something so kids can't just look at it and people, you know, you have to card people to look at it.
They don't
something.
Want penises indiscriminately flying all over the place.
Which is good, because I want a warning as well.
Yeah, I would like to know ahead of time. I mean, I have no problem with penises generally, but yeah. I would like to know...
If I'm gonna look at naked fairies, I'm going to want to know that's the naked fairy book.
Yeah, so, I mean, problem number one is that the final policy is not actually bear any resemblance to the initial policy. And so people reacted really badly to this.
For about a month.
And the thing was is that what happened over the course of this thread, and I mean, I have all this stuff printed out and I can start going through this.
Yeah.
But basically, what happened is that they gradually backed away from this over the course of the thread. And so they started saying things like, well, the policy isn't official yet. Well, it's still under review. And most people, and I think that people were kind of right in thinking this thought, well, that just means they haven't finalized the wording of it. But there, at no point did they say something like, whoops, actually, we didn't mean any of that at all. We actually are not even remotely doing anything that kind of resembles completely banning fan art. I mean, the thing is, like, the official policy is actually, well, you can have fan art, just, you know, don't make it look like licensed merchandise. But that's absolutely nothing to do with what she originally said. And thing number one that pisses me off is that Rachel Ann started speaking from a position of authority, and because she is the head of Artist Alley, began throwing the stuff into the forum, and then was really, really, really upset when people were not totally happy, excited about this change in policy.
There were some very early responses where people were like, hooray, now I can promote my original work. And that's not the majority of people responding. The majority of the response is, oh, crap. I guess I'm not getting a table because all I was going to do was sell 300 Naruto prints.
And in response, in fact, to all the people who were like, well, I'm not going. I mean, she said, the people were saying, well, nobody's going to go. She said, I'm quoting now. She said, personally, I don't think there will be a decrease. I think the Artist Alley will sell out and write quickly, the same way that it does every year. Otakon offers not only the largest, but one of the best-run Artist Alley among anime conventions. Try to look at these changes as a good thing, which is what I believe they are, and what I believe most of your fellow artists think they are.
Oh, good
Lord. She is totally full of shit! I mean, if she wants to say, the thing that drives me crazy is pretending like she's representing anything other than her own personal opinion.
Right.
I mean, if you want to say, I personally don't think that we should be selling fan art, and I personally am championing this cause, that's great. You know what? You're the head of Artist Alley. You can do whatever the hell you want to do. But pretending this is anything other than your own personal crusade is not only ridiculous, but it's also kind of insulting. It's like, who are you trying to kid?
Yeah, there was also, really early on, a lot of people were like, you know, we really love Otakon. We want to give them the benefit of the doubt. Maybe this new policy is in response to something that came up, some kind of trouble. Maybe some dealers came to them and complained.
Yeah, maybe there was a legal crackdown.
Maybe there was a legal crisis. Maybe their lawyer was like, oh my god, what are you guys doing? Or something like that. And when everyone asked, it turned out later, like, Jim Vowles, who's the head of whatever Otakon, he ended up responding, saying, no, this isn't in response to anything.
In fact, yes, because in fact, Rachel Ann, in response to me, in fact, I mean, what I'll read what I said, so yeah. I can't pretend like I wasn't being kind of a jerk. I wrote, let's not pretend that this has anything to do with the artist, and we'll get back to that, but I said, let's not pretend this has anything to do with the artist. This has to do with corporate interests and the pressure they may or may not be putting on Otakon, not MangaCon anime directors in their empty pocketbooks. And in response to that, Rachel Ann wrote, that would be a wrong assumption. There was no outside pressure by corporate interests, powerful governments, galactic copyright enforcement police, aliens, and the like. And it's like,
That is pretty condescending response.
That kind of, what?
That's kind of a condescending response.
Yeah, and it's kind of like, all right. Like, that's sort of setting off alarms in my head, personally.
In the end, that means it's just Rachel Ann. And it's her championing this policy.
Yeah.
A one-person crusade to stop...
Yes.
Towards the end of the thread, Jim Vowles is sort of like, let's not get Otakon into trouble. One lawsuit could break our con.
But which is true. But I mean, like, they kept kind of basically saying, well, this isn't really in response to that. And then, in fact, one person finally said, Van Steen, for the record, said, this new policy doesn't entirely bother me, but my question is, why now? And in response to this, Rachel Ann wrote, I'll take the blame / credit for that. It was my decision to act on this for Otakon 2006, and I thank El Presidente and the Otakon staff for supporting me. So basically she said, actually, this was totally my idea. I am championing this cause. This isn't because some lawyer came and made us do this. It's because Rachel Ann, the woman heading Otakon, decided she
well,
didn't
heading
think
the artist alley.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Rachel Ann, the woman heading artist alley, decided that she didn't like us selling fan art anymore. And then when people were saying things like, okay, that's kind of... Aren't you supposed to be looking out for interests here? She took this very, very personally.
Yeah, there was a lot
ranted of... And ranted about how we were all horribly insulting her.
Yeah, because a lot
effort.
Of... Otakon is not a very corporate con like Anime Expo is, where they say Otakon is by fans for fans. When you buy an Otakon ticket, you're not buying a ticket, you're buying a membership. So they've always been historically really good about listening to feedback, responding, trying to make improvements. It was one happy Otakon, you know, community, and everyone was basking in the love. But I guess that kind of thing doesn't always last forever. When you start to get so big, I guess people start paying attention. But Rachel Ann handled it badly in the beginning, where it wasn't an official policy, and she titled it badly. Then she worded it kind of poorly.
And then she repeatedly clarified things as if there was a final policy that she was referring to.
Right.
These very, very specific.
And then she responded badly and she started to take it personally as people kept attacking it. She knew it was going to be bad when she bolded the giant headline above number 5 saying this is a big one.
Yeah.
But I mean, I can kind of understand. It's hard not to take things personally when you're fighting with someone in a message board. But eventually, other people had to step in and start responding for her, like on Anime News Network and on the Otakon boards. Jim Vowles had to start answering questions himself.
He kept trying to come in and keep the peace, but she kept kind of undoing it really quickly.
Yeah, they had a public relations person start answering questions on Anime News Network.
Yeah.
It got really out of hand.
Yeah, and the thing is, she didn't even pretend to have like a cloak of possible professionalism on top of this. Like, she actually said...
She words things really casually all the time.
And she also says, like, blatantly, she says, I will admit to being somewhat opinionated on the subject. And she talks about how she's a writer, and she's apparently a published novelist.
Yeah.
I'm now super curious, and I'm going to go see if I can find any of her books. And
she brings up personal examples a lot, but that's not really useful in terms of Otakon.
Yeah, she says, the reason I'm doing this is not to get revenge on the one lady who stole my work. She's told an elaborate story about somebody who stole her puppet show.
Yeah, some kind of like...
I'm not going to get into the puppet show. I didn't really understand what had happened anyway.
Yeah, you can read 11 pages of it.
Needless to say, somebody stole her puppet show. It's very unfortunate somebody stole her puppet show. she says, the reason is not revenge. The reason is pretty straightforward. I've been on the other side of quote-unquote fan art, the side where I'm the owner of the art and I know what the feeling is like. The feeling is pretty much the same. Hurt, sometimes anger, and an open disbelief that true fans would do this. The reason I'm doing this is because it's the right thing to do. And this is where everything started to fall apart for me.
Oh, God. Because it's like,
Rachel, it doesn't matter if it's the right thing to do or not. Just tell us what your policy is and enforce it and clarify it.
Like, I'm glad she's trying to do the right thing, But your feelings don't have that much to do with the law.
And also, you're personalizing this way that's completely inappropriate. I mean, we're not talking about Joe, you know, fanfic author. I'm sorry, this, I mean, we're not talking about... Joe fanfic author. No, we're really not talking about Joe fanfic
author. Can it be Joe self-insert fanfic author?
Yeah, no. We're not talking about, like, Joe small-time novelist or Joe puppet show engineer. We're talking about, like... Freaking
Rumio Takahashi.
Yeah, or, you know, like Shinichiro Watanabe or
Hayao
something.
Hayao Miyazaki.
Yeah, we're talking about people who will, A, probably never be aware of the fact that you exist, even if they tried. Like, they're never going to find you in the 8 billion pictures of Jin and Mugen making out on DeviantArt. Okay, and and number two, I mean, the thing is, it's not actually about the artist anyway. And they keep moralizing about this like it's the right thing. Look, this isn't about morality, this is about economics. Like, at the end of the day, it's about the fact that some people have paid a lot of money to make Samurai Champloo t-shirts, and I have not. If I make Samurai Champloo t-shirts and sell them for less than that person who paid a lot of money to do it, I'm costing that person a lot of money. Now, that's a moral issue in the sense that that person has paid for a privilege which I am infringing upon. On the other hand, there is no structure whatsoever for somebody such as myself to give any money back. Like, you know what, frankly, if there was some system in place for me to pay, like, weird fan art taxes, I would totally do it.
Or if there was a way to personally send money to Mangaka in Japan, like, subverting all publishers
or
book
bookstores. I would do it in a goddamn second.
Or bookstores, it's like, yeah, I will send a subsidy immediately to that, to Bisco Hattori.
Because I do think that authors should be rewarded for the fruits of their labor.
Right.
But I don't think that...
Also, let's make a point. I'd like to insert here that when something gets licensed by a company in Japan to make products of it, how much of that money is really going to the artist? Not that much. Like, probably nothing.
Let alone being licensed in a company that licenses it from another company in America. Yeah. I mean, we're like six degrees removed at this point.
Right, like, almost 0 cents are getting back to the original author at that point. That author's being paid by a company who has bought rights from that artist to sell their stuff and to sell the rights to their stuff to other places. Like, the show that we work on now, it's like... Every page of the storyboard has the same rights information printed on it. It says, this page is not to leave the studio. This page contains art which is owned by the company that's, you know, paying to make it. It's the artists who are drawing it don't own it. And I don't... I'm sure rights are very different in Japan. But also, a major difference between something like Comiket and Otakon, and between the Japanese legal system and the American legal system, a lot of copyright laws in both countries are actually very similar. The difference is people's attitude towards that law. Like, at Comiket, they sell things which are clearly illegal under copyright laws, but they kind of allow it. Your right to sue people in America, it's a big right, it's an important right, and I'm glad we have the right to sue anyone for almost anything. On the other hand, it causes a lot of problems. People get very lawsuit happy, and there's all kinds of crazy crap that you can read about this, I'm sure. But people in America fear lawsuits all the time. A lot of things that we do are for fear of being sued. They're warning labels on everything.
Which is, by the way, the reason why there is actually no case law at all regarding fan art or fan fiction. The closest thing we have is case law regarding the Wind Done Gone, which, by the way, won, I would like to point out.
Okay.
I would just like to point out. And actually, it got settled.
What is it?
The Wind Done Gone was a novel that was based on Gone with the Wind.
Oh, okay.
And they ended up settling it after there was a decision, and then they appealed it, and then there was a settlement during the appeal, is from what I can tell.
Okay.
Anyway, The Wind Done Gone... An Atlanta judge had blocked the publication of The Wind Done Gone in April 2001, ruling that it violated the copyright of Mitchell's 1936 classic about the Civil War, in this case referring to Gone with the Wind. A month later, the 11th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals in Atlanta, ironically, in Atlanta, ruled that the injunction was, quote-unquote, an extraordinary and drastic remedy and that, quote-unquote, amounts to unlawful prior restraint in violation of the First Amendment. Yes, so in any case, they did originally...
They blocked it, and then
they won the...
Wait, isn't it... That's like a parody thing.
Yeah, this... I mean, the thing is, like, it won because of...
But
the point is, there's almost no case law about this, because...
People fear lawsuits.
Lawsuit happy that they drop it the minute it even comes up.
Also, I'd like to point out, in Japan, people don't sue each other all the time because taking someone to court is much lengthier and worse, even worse, process there than it is here. And in the end, paying the Yakuza for protection is a lot simpler than simply suing someone about something. And it's sad, but true. And also, it's a culture of shame. So when you take someone to court, you're shaming your entire family and yourself, and you're probably not covered by the same kind of things you would be in America, where if you lose your job because of a lawsuit, and I don't know, crazy crap. It looked like you have something to say. No.
Yeah, I want
to
step in here. Go. Which is that there is something far more concrete than a different attitude between the United States and Japan.
Ta-da!
And while I'm not a lawyer, I do have the advantage of having many lawyers around me, so that I may have been able to get certain legal advice in regards...
A subtle hint towards his secret career.
Right, in regards to this issue. The chief difference, at least as far as this issue of fan art goes, between Japanese copyright law and American copyright law, is that in Japan, you can always defend your copyright. In America, if you know of an infringement and do not take that person to court, do not tell them to cease and desist, your copyright becomes in question. That is, you must vigilantly defend your copyright.
Now, I thought that was just trademark and not copyright.
No, this is very specifically so.
Okay.
So one of the reasons why companies are so vigilant about enforcing this is that if they don't do that, they could lose when someone who is a little bit more intimidating than a fan artist comes along and starts infringing on their copyright in a way that significantly detracts from their market share. When they go to court, their competition can then point to the fan artist, who is a little schlub and a nobody as far as his market clout is concerned, and say, this person was doing this. You were aware that they were doing this because they were doing it in a forum like Otakon. It's very public, and you knew that Otakon existed, and you knew that these people were there doing that. And so your claim to your copyright is less than it would otherwise be. Now, of course, these copyright holders, they do indeed spend an enormous amount of money acquiring those rights, and so they have to be vigilant. They must keep this corral of copyright lawyers to ensure that they maintain their copyrights. It's not that way in Japan. That's how there's a booming Comiket market, where all kinds of things go on, and I'm sure that the original artists are well aware, indeed most of them started out as doujin artists, so they know what's going on, and because there isn't the same relationship between the fan artist and the copyright holder as there is here, it's a perfectly legitimate means of expression. That's what I have to say on the subject at the moment. I'll chime in later with some other stuff.
I mean, my personal issue is not actually with the policy, but the way in which it's been handled.
Right, the way in which it was handled. Okay, so I'm going to read the email from Anime News, not email, so forum posting from Anime News Network by Carl Gustav Horn, manga editor of Dark Horse Comics, who I got to meet at New York Comic Con this weekend, and me and Noah talked to him for a little while. But his post was so awesome that it was reposted on many people's blogs and so forth.
It was totally awesome.
It's great. Okay, so he says, and it's going to take a while, I have always received a positive impression of Otakon in the past, and it is my hope that the report of a ban of fan art at the 2006 event is untrue. It is difficult to imagine any single gesture a convention could make that would be more antithetical to the spirit of anime and manga fans. Doujinshi, a term which usually refers to printed manga in booklet form, which can mean any variety of goods, is the heart and soul of fan activity in Japan. Because of the tremendous size of the scene, a great many doujinshi in Japan are original works. However, the majority are parodies, tributes, and side stories of pre-existing manga, anime, and video games. In a word, fan art. Some sense of the size of the fan art scene can be given by the fact that Japan's largest doujinshi convention, Comic Market, or Comiket, has more fan artist tables than Otakon has attendees. And Comic-Con's attendees number in excess of 350,000, more than every U.S. anime and manga con put together. Still more amazing, this event happens not once, but twice a year, and Comic-Con is only the largest such event. There are doujin conventions somewhere in Japan every weekend. The last decade has seen the scene expand beyond conventions to chain stores. They either specialize in doujinshi, like Torinohana, which was at New York Comic Con this weekend.
Although not selling doujinshi.
Right, exactly. Or strongly represent it, such as Madarake. Given such numbers, it would be obvious that fan art is hardly an underground phenomenon in Japan. Living in fear of creators and license holders, for years, Torinohana has run an ad in the back page of Shonen Ace magazine, home of the manga Evangelion, Sergeant Frog, Eureka 7, Blood Plus, and Girls Bravo. In fact, while there have been occasional instances where a company has sought to suppress fan art, they are the exception. Major manga publishers and anime studios themselves exhibit in a special area of Comic-Con, in the midst of hundreds of thousands of fans buying and selling doujinshi featuring their characters. From a professional standpoint, these companies might look down upon fan art as amateurish, which of course, by definition, it is. But by amateurish, they refer not necessarily to skill, but to context. These artists aren't working within the industry. By the same token, doujinshi are a tremendous scouting camp for a promising young artist who might be asked to assist on a professional project or even undertake an original one. Riko Koshi and Yasushiro Naito are two of only many mangaka who jump directly from doujinshi to professional work. Even for the majority of fan artists who lack either the inclination or the talent to become professional, doujinshi serve another purpose from the perspectives of the industry. They're a gauge of fan enthusiasm for a title. This significance for everything from independent productions looking to see if fans have picked up on their work, to Shonen Jump, Japan's largest manga magazine, for whose fan art publications entire sections of Comic-Con are reserved. So that means at Comic-Con there's an entire just Shonen Jump section. Finally, of course, doujinshi are the most significant for what they represent for their own sake, to the fans themselves, the tremendous love, fun, and enthusiasm for the visual culture of anime, manga, and games. Fan art is properly recognized as a sign of health for this media in general. From the perspective of the ailing American comics industry, one cannot help but note that Comic-Con, a fan convention, is several times the size of San Diego Comic-Con, the U.S.'s largest pro convention. There's no equivalent of Comic-Con in Japan, as manga, a true mass medium, is far too big to be symbolized by a single event. It would be as absurd as a convention in the U.S. for which there would be like Americans who like to watch TV. Previous Otakon guests who have produced and contributed to doujinshi include Yashiro Naito, Takahashi Kodo. Oh man, this list goes on.
A lot of people.
Hiroshiano, Yoshibe Abe, Teru Kadase, it keeps going.
Adam Warren and Ben Dunn.
Fred Perry, Robert DeJesus, and Torrin Smith.
We can say those ones.
Yeah. Three of the Americans I name became involved with some of the very same doujinshi that Otakon's Japanese guest contributed to. Fan art has been not only a form of expression shared by both Japanese and Westerners, but it has proved an immediate common communication between them. Many of the manga artists that Dark Horse Comics publishes have themselves been active in doujinshi. In addition to names from among the list above, they include Kohata Hirose, the Helsing guy, Tsurata, the Spirit of Wonder, there's another list. I will link to this message, I promise. The Gunsmith Cats guy, keeps going. Now known as Megaton Punch, remains one of Japan's best. This list serves as a reminder that fan art is not something necessarily left behind when an artist turns pro. Many professional artists still make time for it. I myself have been a fan artist and have helped to publish and sell a fan doujinshi at U.S. conventions. Of course, it is certainly possible I might have received negative consequences from it, but in fact, it didn't occur. And again, not because I whisked it under the table when a U.S. representative of license holders approached. In fact, two of them were kind enough to buy it, and not for a sting. Not for a sting operation. You learn something about the individuals who make up the faceless term "the industry" that way, what kind of people they are. You're reminded that, like these professional manga and anime artists, they themselves began as fans and still are. I certainly don't speak for ADV Films or their policies, but I would list them as a foremost example. ADV has always been a company which has understood the role of fan expression that has played and continues to play for both Japan and America. This isn't a mere indulgence, a policy of toleration. It has been the very key to their success. Conventional US media companies remain largely naive about anime and manga to this day. I've observed an astonishing ignorance about it from entertainment giants who are thinking about getting into that Japanese stuff. True business sophistication in this field comes from knowing that it has not grown by being a top-down affair, the model where fans are given guidelines for authorized thoughts and activities. It hasn't in Japan, and owing to the very space between Japan and the West, it hasn't been so here either. ADV has built their very considerable share of the industry within that space, which represents spontaneity, freedom, and opportunity for growth. It would be an exaggeration to say that the U.S. anime and manga industries are a creation of its fans, but there is a great deal of truth to it, and again, the contrast with the conventional media companies obsessed with control about creativity, grasping tighter in reflex as things they understand start to slip away, is remarkable. A closing irony is that fan art is hardly an out-of-control menace at U.S. anime and manga cons. In fact, as a percentage of total offerings, it's barely noticeable. Kenshi Sodona, as a guest of honor at Anime Central, famously asked, "Where all the American doujinshi are?" You might see some sketches in a portfolio, or maybe a pack of drawings for sale, but very rarely fan doujinshi in the Japanese sense, even in the scene for original doujin here is scanty compared to Japan, although there are people making a real effort, certainly more than me. If anything, we need more fan art in the West, not as banning or discouragement. The first Otakon I attended was in 1995, a surreal event that seemed to rise out of the Pennsylvania countryside. In the eve of Evangelion's premiere, Gainax founder Toshio Okada came there as a guest because, he said, the convention had the guts to name itself for otaku. Okada was known to fans here through his alter ego, Tanaka, in Otaku no Video, which, of course, he tries to otakonize his friends Kubo by pushing doujinshi on him. The last time I went to Otakon, it had, of course, been in Baltimore for many years. It had become so much bigger, yet it was in my honest opinion that somehow the staff, even under its tremendous organizational challenges, the unbelievable work that goes into putting on the event, had managed to remember who they were, to greet the attendees not as customers, but as friends and comrades, as fellow fans. Fan art is only a perspective, and it is having a perspective that makes a fan, instead of nothing more than consumer. This isn't idealism. This is how we've got this far.
Which is
Carl Horn, manga editor, Dark Horse Comics.
Dark Horse Comics. Nice guys.
Dark Horse puts out really great manga. This is the end of part two of the discussion with Allison about the Otakon Artist Alley policy.
How many of these are you going to do?
I have four. This is... Okay.